Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
McSorley takes the snap, gives it to Barkley, up the middle, lowers the shoulder to the goal line. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions take the big John Reed punt return, cash it in, and cut the Pitt lead in half.
On third and 12, Penn State 45. Peterman back. Waits, sets, delivers through the hands and intercepted by Penn State at the 30. Malik Golden tripped up at the 35-yard line by Dontez Ford. His second career interception, and Penn State gets the takeaway with 8:20 to go in the half. McSorley, Barkley leaps up over the top. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions got a big score near the end of the half. McSorley takes it back, sets, throws Barkley on the wheel route to the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Penn State.
I'll tell you what, they worry about Barkley on the running plays, but you better worry about him in the passing plays as well.
Play action, McSorley. Steps up, long and deep Tompkins. Hand fighting at the 5. Got it inside the 5 and down to the 2-yard line. First and goal, Penn State. DeAndre Tompkins with an outstanding catch.
That went far side, two near side. Barkley to the right now. McSorley gives it to Barkley up the middle to the goal line. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions cut the Pitt lead in half again.
Connor, right side, breaks a tackle, then taken down at the 10. He fumbles the football, and Penn State recovers. Amani Oyewariye was around it, and Penn State gets the ball at the 10-yard line on the fumble recovery. Barhash angled to his right. Put down. Kick is on its way. The kick by Davis is gone. And Penn State cuts into the lead. It's 35-31 Pitt with 12:04 left in the game.
High end over end, returnable. He'll run underneath it at the 7. 10, 15, 20. Veers near side. Gets a block. 20. Julius can't get him to the 40. Henderson near sideline. 50, 40. 30. Stutter steps inside to the 20. Cuts to the center of the field. 15. Now it was left and down at the 10-yard line. And that is what Quadre Henderson can do.
Wing right Kosicki. Two near side. Godwin far side. McSorley gives it again to Barkley. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions with 5 minutes to go. Climb back to within 5, 42-37. Back he goes, double clutches, rolls near side. Throws in the end zone, Hamilton got it. Two-point conversion good, and Penn State's within 3, 42-39.
Snap, back he goes. Steps up, waits, delivers downfield. Tompkins got him at the 40-yard line, 35. First down, Penn State inside the 35-yard line to the 33 with 2:08 to go. They blitz. Back he goes. Steps up. Long and deep. Near side. Looking for Charles. Picked off in the end zone by Lewis of Pitt.
Well, that game certainly wasn't wanting for action. If you were just a neutral observer and just wanted to watch a game on Saturday, you probably hung with that game in the last hour and a half and said, what's going to happen next? That was, from a pure entertainment point of view, a great entertainment game. For a Penn State fan, that must have felt like torture watching that for most of the day, even though they kept coming back. They never got the lead. It was just a tale of two games. The first 19 minutes and 40 seconds, Pitt outscored Penn State 28-7. They had a great game plan. They executed it well. They got out of the gate. They did so with a lot of emotion. They had all of that going for them. But then Penn State adjusted. And that was the key. Penn State made great adjustments in this game and outscored Pitt 32-14. Over the final 40 minutes and 40 seconds. And that's how they got back in it. Now, you can say, did it take them too long to adjust a certain... Look, there are negatives in this game. And, okay, the negatives are obvious. You lose the game, so that's one big negative. Okay. Number two, what's another negative? The turnovers are a huge negative in this game. Pitt had three drives for touchdowns that were 30 yards or less, two of them off takeaways and one off the kickoff return by Henderson, which is the other negative. Penn State cannot afford ever to have a big kickoff return against it. Can't happen. You want to win games. That's an area that must be buttoned down all the time. There should never be a kickoff return that gets out beyond the 30-yard line in a game. And, you know, we know that's a stated goal there, is that they work on this all the time. And that kickoff return was huge in this game because Penn State's got all the momentum and he gives it right back to them. And then it's a 12-yard drive. Now, the first two downs, they defense really well. And then that shovel pass to Connor, O'Neal kicked out, and he got Bell. Because Bell has him. And O'Neal made a great block for Pitt. And that opened the door for Connor to get in. Connor ran the ball well. You can't have a team run the ball for 337 yards on you. You just can't. You can't do that. Right. So, and then the other one was, you heard the recovery of the Connor fumble by John Reed at the 11. And then the next highlight you heard was Tyler Davis. Well, that shouldn't have been the next highlight there. It should have been a touchdown there. And that was key because that was the one time that Pitt made a stand in the game defensively and held Penn State to a field goal in a game where everybody was scoring touchdowns. And you lost the game. And so you will look at all that. You need to finish that. You're at the 11-yard line. Pitt was at the 12 on the kickoff return. They finished it. Penn State was at the 11 and got three out of it. Positives. Number one, this is a better football team today than what we saw after game two last year. It's a better football team after game two than what we saw after game two 2 years ago. That said, they're 1-1. I thought that Barkley played a really gutsy game. 20 carries, 85 yards, the four touchdowns, the one reception for a touchdown. I mean, look at some of the play calling in this game that they made. And the wheel route to Barkley for a score and several other plays where McSorley threw for over 300 yards in this game. Now, the four turnovers are crushing. You cannot lose giveaway takeaway in a game. You can't. I'd say 7 times out of 10 you lose giveaway takeaway, you lose the game. Penn State lost giveaway takeaway. And there was that big kick return. Can't have that in big games. That's got to be kept. You got to keep your mistakes to a minimum. But McSorley threw for over 300. Another really fabulous all-around performance by Barkley. Tompkins emerging with Blacknall out as a receiver that you can also turn to. He made three big catches in that game, all in the clutch. Defensively, Pitt had him going all sorts of angles with, you know, out of that double wing, reverses, inside handoffs, then, of course, a steady dose of Connor. He finally got a handle on all of that in the second half. But they never did put Peterman in a position where Peterman had to win the game. Peterson was allowed to make plays and manage the game. He was never put in a position to win the game. Never. And they had, what, 5 starters out at one point. And I thought they made some good adjustments in that game. I thought Torrence Brown came in, gave them some pluses. I thought Windsor came in, gave them some pluses. Antoine White came in, gave them some pluses. Jake Cooper, I thought Manny Bowen started and gave them some pluses. And I was fine with how the secondary played all day. And they're one Deshaun Hamilton catch away from winning it. They're one, maybe Irvin Charles play at the end there from winning it. And That's how I looked at it. Now, you may not have looked at it the same way, but again, Pitt's playing early, excellent, well executed, came at Penn State from all angles on both sides of the ball. Final 40 minutes, Penn State adjusted, had Pitt on its heels. Pitt couldn't control Penn State. Pitt didn't know what was coming next. If they did, they didn't, you know, Penn State over the last 40 minutes was better. But when you dig that deep a hole, that is a huge mountain to climb, and Penn State never did get to the summit of tying the game or taking the lead. So, you know, and I think it's always important when you get into games like these that playing with the lead is so important. Mentally playing uphill is a real drain. And Pitt played with the lead because they earned the lead. They earned it. They earned the lead. No getting around. Nothing wrong with saying they earned the league, as they did. They earned it. And then Penn State made a comeback, which shows the offensive potential they have. That once they get things steady on defense, I saw something there over the last 40 minutes. They only gave up 14 points, and one was on a 12-yard drive. And they showed guts and resiliency. 9 out of 10 teams down 28-7 fold the tent and leave. Final score 42-10. 42-14. Blowout. Instead, the team with 42 is hanging on at the end and really happy the game doesn't go five more minutes. So they showed a lot of guts and resiliency, and they showed the ability to make excellent adjustments in the game. Now they've got to be better getting out of the gate and putting game pressure on somebody else and making them, because Pitt's playing out of the gate was excellent. Penn State's adjustments turned out to be excellent. It turned out the one out of the gate had enough collateral to win the game, and did. And you can't let a team run for 337. You can't do that. That you are controlling the clock on a hot day like that. And when you control the clock on a hot day like that, like Pitt did, between James Conner, who was outstanding, I thought their offensive line was really good, Allison was really good, and then they mixed in the speed packages really well. But Penn State finally got a handle on that. They only gave up the one long drive in the last 2.5 quarters. And it hurt, too, because it was after a score. We'll take a break. Matt Leon joins us today. Joe Susan joins us today. And much more as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
The Steve Jones Show, honoring the 50th anniversary of Joe Paterno's first game as Penn State head coach on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Okay, Hey, great to have you with us. We're going to have Greg Garrity Sr. on later in the week. Steve Smears on later in the week. Ted Kwolek is on later in the week. So we'll talk about all that. I think I've told the story of Joe's first game, right? I'm sure I have. The one where Lou Saban, you guys know this story. You probably could repeat it back to me. Penn State wins the game 15-7 over Maryland. So Lou Saban, who had been the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, he'd been the coach of the Boston Patriots originally, and then he was hired by the Buffalo Bills. And he guided the Bills to the AFL championship in 1964 and 1965. Well, Maryland decides to throw some money at him and get him to be the head coach at Maryland. And Lou Saban then takes in its first game at Maryland, which is also Joe's first game as the head coach at Penn State. But Joe had always been up in the box during the Rip Engel era. So he was never on the field when the old handshakes took place, so he never really knew what that was like at the end of the game. Well, Mike Reed gets three safeties. Penn State wins the game 15-7. It's not exactly a classic. So Joe wins the game. It's his first win. He goes running out to the center of the field, looks around. There's no Lou Saban. There's no Lou Saban anywhere. Joe keeps looking, can't find him. All right. So eventually he shakes a few other hands, retreats to the locker room. And then on Monday at his office, that's a phone call. It's Lou Saban. He says, Joe, geez, I feel awful. You know what? He says, I kind of realized later this was your first win as a head coach, the whole thing. I feel terrible about not greeting you at midfield. He says, but I'll be honest with you. He says, we both played so lousy, I didn't know what to tell you. So that was his first game. 1-800-795-9565. That's the number. Jump in. Love to hear from you. Oh, and yes, the Spikes do go for the championship tonight. If they can win tonight, they would be over. If they lose, they play the final game tomorrow. Weather's great for it. And then Temple's coming in here on Saturday. 800-795-9565. You want to jump in, that would be great. Great to hear from all of you. Steelers play tonight on 100.9 The Valley. With Bill Hillgrove, Tunjelkin, Craig Woofley, they play the Redskins tonight. That's a really good matchup. A couple of division champs head-to-head. It's a really good matchup.
I'm curious to see the Josh Norman, Antonio Brown matchup to see how long he's going to stay with AB and maybe do some switching around in the secondary.
Yeah, well, that's one thing about the Steelers, though. They have so many weapons. It doesn't really matter if you have one guy shut him down. Richard Sherman shut down Antonio Brown almost completely out in Seattle. And Roethlisberger still threw for 450 yards because he went other places. But that's why the Redskins got Josh Norman. They got him from moments in games like these where you put him against a big-time receiver with the idea that he should be able to do the job in that big-time receiver and force Roethlisberger to go other places. That's why he got him. But Antonio Brown sure is a tough dude to keep a handle on. You know that? Joe Susan, next half hour.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Find out why, and you'll do what we do. You'll go to Purdy Insurance. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now to bring in the head football coach at Bucknell, Joe Susan. Joe, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Steve.
Yes, Joe, I'm right here.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, we watch it out after 24 hours, and Bob Odell, who's a College Football Hall of Fame player and longtime coach, once put his arm around me and says, "Joe, you know, losing's worse than winning's good." And as long as you have that in your gut and it you let it burn you, you never get used to it, and we never will. And I think the young men on our team will rebound and rebound well.
All right, so what was it that Duquesne did that helped them that maybe your guys did not do well enough at?
Obviously, possessing the ball and not turning the ball over. But one of the things Duquesne really did a good job with was they were very patient in being able to take advantage of the quick game, the three-step drop game that at times teams don't have that patience to take it while it's there. And it's a tribute to Jerry Schmidt and his staff, but also a tribute to their quarterback who he did a good job of making time for himself, didn't make many bad throws, and when we did push him out of the pocket, he scrambled, and it's a tribute to him, but it's also a tribute to his receivers because they seem to be on the same page. We had our opportunities versus man-to-man, and it wasn't a pressure thing. It was the pass, whether it's overthrown, underthrown, or dropped. You got to make those. You got to make those plays because that was Duquesne's MO. They're going to play you man-to-man. They're going to challenge you. They feel confident in their ability to cover you, and we had our opportunities up top the defense or with leverage on the defense, and one was overthrown, one was on the receiver's gloves, and he dropped it. And so those things accumulate against a good team, and the margin of error in college football is so thin.
Oh yeah,
that and we had a chance to get back in the game. We make it 13-7. And they wind up scoring to make it 20-7, and then they kick off, and we had miscommunication. They're afraid of our kickoff returns, which they should be, but our tight end is taught to fair catch it, stay on the 30, don't back up. He didn't back up, but he went forward. The ball landed on the 30, and the fullback had 15 yards to cover before he could get to the ball, and by that time they hit him. The ball was free, and we turned it over there.
You fall behind, though, in this game, and you're behind at halftime. How mentally draining is it for everybody to play uphill? It's a 60-minute game, but you had to play uphill most of the game.
I'll give a lot of tribute to our kids. They came out in the second half and played really hard defensively, really hard offensively. And we school them up that there are going to be times where you're behind in the scoreboard, and it really doesn't matter until they chase you off the field. So the maturity that we have in a lot of positions, that was not a concern of mine. My concern was that we turned the ball over twice in the first half, and that's one of the things that we preach all the time to all three phases. The ball is a program, and one of the turnovers was a reception that would have got us to the fringe of the red zone, and we turn it over. And our very next possession, we turn it over. So those are opportunities lost, and momentum things lost too, which is frustrating. But in terms of their willingness to do what we had to do at halftime and then come out in the second half and play, I thought they played hard in the second half. The scoreboard got away from us, obviously, but thing that I give a lot of tribute to our kids is that they played until the final whistle, and that shows me a lot about them. Obviously, you want to win. We're going to do what it takes to win, and in college football, you're judged by winning. I heard a perfect analogy last night on one of the NFL stations is losing a game in football is like losing 10 straight in baseball.
That's right.
And it's so true. You know, you only have so many opportunities. And The math is a little bit more equal in the NFL because there's 162 games in Major League Baseball, 16 games in the NFL. And it's true. You know, but the thing that I told my team after the game is that we have a lot to play for, and every opportunity we have. And the thing, our ultimate goal is to do what it takes to put ourselves in a position to win the league. But we have two more games, and this next game is the most important game of the season against Cornell, that before we get into the league play. And the good thing is that our players are mature enough to understand that, and they came out last night. And I know that this loss impacts you, obviously. I think sometimes it impacts people that have been coaching for 39 years more than it impacts kids that are 18 to 23. But they came out last night, did a very good job. I actually had the opportunity to spend some time with them prior to taking them out, talking about 9-1-1. And a lot of them were somewhere between 2 years old and 6 years old when that occurred. So it's more a history lesson than it was a reality for them. But it's right. Something that kind of rings. You can't forget it, and it changed the way we live. You know, just go to an airport.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, Joe. Wednesday night, I did a baseball playoff game at Staten Island, and the World Trade Center is the view right over center field, and the two floodlights were coming up. And I'm going to be doing the Never Forget game, December 10th. In New York. I'm broadcasting that game, part of a doubleheader, Villanova, Notre Dame, Penn State, Pitt. So, I mean, really the impact of that is around us all the time. So, can I ask about conditioning? It was about 93-94 at game time. What did it tell you about the conditioning of your team, especially the fact that you scored on your last two touchdowns in your last two drives?
Now, we did have a couple of guys that did go with cramps, Brian Marine, that it really hampers a corner who runs for a living. The other thing that Brian Marine is he's a very important special teams player. He's a flyer. He's our off-returner. He's on the punt block team. And it impacted him, but otherwise I thought Abdullah Anderson, who's 6'4", 295, played 90 plays on defense, and we actually put him in at fullback on offense. And he got better as the game went on, so it's a tribute to those guys. I think a lot of it had to do with the heat that we went through during preseason. Our players have to be intelligent in terms of their preparation from a hydration standpoint well before the game, you know, the week before the game. And I hammered that into them because some of the younger guys who have to play aren't the smartest guys when it comes to the hydration habit that and you look at the temperature this week, obviously today was nice, but it's going to get hot again, and that's the way it is. It's you've got to be able to control what you can control. And I thought our conditioning was well, especially with our defense having to be out there. I think snaps that counted, Duquesne took 81 snaps, and that's a lot of football.
And it's a lot of football. Cornell, big game for you this week. You finally get back home. Cornell is always a great rival for you. What are a couple things they're going to bring to the table that right away that jump out that you need to take care of?
Well, they bring experience. They bring a team that has yet to play a football game, so it gives them that advantage in terms of health. But I told my team this: the advantage you have is that you've already played two. They're a spread offense. They do a good job at getting the ball to a variety of different people. They will have some of the bigger and better group of tight ends that we have to face. And I think people that use the tight end really take advantage of matchups. Defensively, they're one of the first four down team that we're going to play this year. They're primarily a quarters coverage team, but they will play some man-to-man, and they'll actually play some what we call cover zero, which is straight man-to-man.
Right.
So, again, we'll have the opportunity to convert versus man. If you watch them run onto the field, they're one of the biggest teams we'll play. And the size factor, how does it relate as it relates to speed? I feel confident that we have good team speed. It'll be interesting to see because, again, we haven't seen them yet, and there's no way that they're going to send us any of their preseason film. So it's preparing for what they've done and then preparing for what uncertainty. You got to be ready for what they haven't done but might do.
One final question. The Ivy League has this year gone to a model where there's no, quote, hitting during the week. You're only going to hit on game day. Now, they can do tag off and thud, I'm sure, and things like that. That's a trend that's happening right now. I know in FBS, it's you can do that twice a week than the game. The Big 12 is twice a week, but the second one's the game. How do you feel about the contact rules, and how much contact do you like to have in the preseason and game week leading up idealistically?
We've been doing it that way for a long time. So I know the Ivy League likes to see itself as the inventor of things, but their rosters are 105. Our roster is 85.
Right.
So we've been very smart about limiting the contact that we have during preseason, live tackling to the ground. And then once we get into the season, all we do is either tag or thud. And it's just a matter of we need our guys to be able to get to the game. We do a tackling circuit every day. We do a ball disruption, ball security circuit every day. And our players, for the most part, don't miss many tackles. Now, we missed a few on Saturday night. I think some of that had to do with the speed that Duquesne brought out. But from a contact standpoint, this is something that is not new to us or, I believe, any of the guys in the Patriot League. And I would imagine that if you looked at the FBS in terms of the live tackling they do during the week, a lot of guys would say the same, that they're not doing any live tackling. It's more the NFL model where you got to get your team to Saturday, and that has been our focus.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that happen in FCS or FBS, I think, along the way.
Yep.
In FBS, I think you're going to see that model that you talked about. There's going to be less hitting during the week. They may have to go to the Big 12 and let you do it once, and the second would be the game. But I think that's the direction they're going in.
Yeah, I would imagine that if they do live tackling at that level, it's brief, and it might be where they let some of the younger guys play some football after the older guys have finished practice.
That's exactly right.
The junior varsity games don't exist anymore in most cases.
Joe, always a pleasure. This game's going to be at 6 o'clock Saturday at Mathewson. Best of luck with it. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Sean. You guys have a good day, all right?
You too, Coach.
Bye.
Joe Susan, they've got a game, 6 o'clock. We hope you're out there at Mathewson coming up on Saturday evening against the Big Red of Cornell. And looking to go to 2-1 on the year. That should be a really good game on Saturday evening. You'll hear it, by the way, with Doug and the Soup on Eagle 107. Does Doug refer to him on the air as the Soup?
I have not heard that as of yet. Exclusive here.
But Doug and I need to talk. I mean, Doug needs to understand what he's dealing with here. Did you see the Instagram picture of him at Duquesne?
I saw he did a little 2-minute Periscope video. I did see that. It was like a still shot.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, the still shot.
Right. With the headset on and the,
I mean, it looked like you could play cornhole. What's that? What was that? And why isn't Doug doing it now? All right, we'll come back. A Periscope thing, he's just standing there like, it looked like a bass. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Tell Wakeman to stop laughing. On News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
The Steve Jones Show, honoring the 50th anniversary of Joe Paterno's first game as Penn State head coach on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
That was 50 years exactly this Saturday coming up, as a matter of fact. And Neil Smith in the next half hour. Later in the week, Ted Qualick, Steve Smear, Greg Garrity Sr. We're working on trying to get Jimmy Cephalo as well. So we're trying to get a wide range here on Yonder Show on the broadcast facility of Champions. So I understand that the you're telling me that the suit covered the Danville game the other night and...
In the stands, yeah. Well, not covered it, but went
when
to
it. When it came time to come through in the clutch, he was a no-show in the show.
So I was hoping to get a compelling report from him for game night. It was a 42-30 game, and Tourisville's out to a 3-0 start. They've defeated Shikellamy, Seawolves Grove, now Danville. So I figured, okay.
Look, let's be straight about something. You were hoping to get a report. There was going to be nothing compelling about it.
I'm a glass half full kind of guy and not half empty.
So am I. That's why I figured just getting a report was going to be good enough.
I figured much in the game that he could just, you know, reel off some stuff for me and fill up the show and give me a chance to catch my breath and rack up more highlights for the next game to talk about. But hey, we charged through anyway.
Are you all right? Are you feverish? What? I'm a little worried about you right now. All right.
You think I'd know by now since we've worked together for 20-plus years.
All right. But we have a lot going on, including and we got Penn State Temple Saturday at noon. Bucknell has Cornell at 6. So both those games are home. And so we got plenty of that. The Oklahoma State thing at the end was bizarre. The officials had it wrong. I know you're surprised. The officials had it wrong. Oklahoma State actually won the game. But they're not going to change the... They're not going to change the result, Central Michigan winning it. But they should not have had that chance to do it. Okay. RG3 has been put on IR. Man, are the Eagles bad. I mean, the Browns are bad. Oh.
Well, he took a shot going off the stop toward the sidelines at the 2-minute warning of the game. That's when it happened, and he couldn't. He was out for like one more pass play. He could barely get the ball up in the air.
Yeah,
he was hurting. I thought it was. I thought he would at least last until his rematch with the Redskins. But so,
Josh Contrer.
Yeah, Josh McCall, Cody Kessler moving up now in the depth chart.
There we go. Fabulous. Boy, the Browns are bad. That's why I asked. I mean, the Eagles won yesterday. Does that count? No, I'm just kidding. It's the Browns. Does it count? Yeah, it counts. All right.
Nice opener for Carson Wentz, passing for what, 278?
He didn't do much wrong yesterday. Matt Leon's going to talk about that later in the show. Neil Smith coming up next half hour. He, along with Pete Harris, the single-season record holders for interceptions at Penn State. We'll talk to Neil in just a few moments. News at the top of the hour. We're going to release Sean Carey's medical records just so everybody knows he's healthy enough to do the show. What do you think, Sean? No?
No.
Well, but you think we might find out you're not?
break the news to me gently if there's something bad in there.
Well, I've got the report right here. Let's start with this number. What about...
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.